The one semester undergraduate course was called Fate and the Individual in European Literature. It had a reading list including Augustine's Confessions, The Brothers Karamazov, Moby Dick, 4 Shakespeare plays, 9 operas and the libretti, and even more, bringing the required reading to 6,000 pages. This is the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. The course was a kind of great books curriculum, all super compressed into one semester. It was designed and taught in 1941 at the University of Michigan by poet W.H. Auden. And while the course is no longer one semester, and the syllabus has undergone some modifications, the spirit of Auden and his course live on at the University of Oklahoma. One of the 3 professors behind the course is historian Dr. Wilfred McClay, the university's G.T. and Libby Blankenship Chair in the History of Liberty. In that position, Dr. McClay teaches students about the evolution of the concept of liberty in Western civilization and directs the Center for the History of Liberty. He's a senior scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington, D.C., and senior fellow at both the Ethics and Public Policy Center and the Trinity Forum. Dr. McClay was visiting here at Wyoming Catholic College to deliver a lecture for us this past weekend, and I asked him about Auden's syllabus and his course.
Well, it started really when Alan Jacobs, the professor of English at Baylor University, posted on the internet a syllabus that W.H. Auden had used at the University of Michigan in the fall of 1941 when he was teaching as a visiting professor there. And the syllabus was posted on Alan's website, one of his websites, and it got a lot of circulation, and people were fascinated by it because it was just an overwhelming course in terms of the demands on students, in terms of the high caliber of the work being exacted from students. And it was basically a kind of short version of the great books of the Western world with a literary tilt to it. The course was titled Fate and the Individual in European Literature, and it ran from antiquity, Greek plays, oddly enough, no Greek epics, but some of the Greek tragedians, Aeneid, Dante, Milton, etc. And all in all, the course involved about 6,000 pages of reading. It included 9 operas, count them, 9, and Wagner, Mozart, etc. And also some works of scholarship, most of which I think actually are kind of out of date now, but were current in the 1940s. Some works of social science and so on. So it was it's a very formidable course, and people reacted to it either with a sense of dismay over what the kinds of things one could still expect of undergraduates in 1941 compared to what we can expect of them today. Or the other reaction was, who actually believes that anybody actually did the work in this course? There are testimonies from students who were in the course that they did, in fact, do the work, and that, in fact, it was a fascinating course, as much of an introduction to the mind of W.H. Auden as anything else. And I was fascinated with the whole idea of the course, and the more I thought about it, the more it seemed to me a course worth trying to offer, if I had the right circumstances to do it. Well, when I came to the University of Oklahoma 6 years ago, I did have those circumstances. I had wonderful students. I had an administration that was very geared towards and approving of innovations, including highly traditionalist innovations. And so with 2 other colleagues, one of whom is the provost of the university, other of whom is a junior English professor, but a very talented fellow, we have offered the course now for 2 years. And it's been an enormous success. I think the reason that there's been so much interest in it is not merely that it's a demanding course, but that students have flocked to it We have not had any empty seats. Every year, every semester that we offer the course, we up the ceiling and we more than meet it. We always have a waiting list. And this is hard for people to believe. They think undergraduates don't want challenging work. They don't want to read works like the Homeric epics and Beowulf and Sir Gawain and the Green Knight and so on, all the way up to the present, or nearly the present. We do read Derek Walcott's epic poem, Omeros, which is a kind of retelling of the Odyssey as a capstone. And we read some Walker Percy and some other more recent writers. But it's a long sweep. It's a long haul. And people are surprised or amazed that we have incontrovertible proof that there is a significant number of students that want this. So all is not lost in American academia. And people should take heart from this. It's possible to demand a lot of students if you're giving them the real thing, the real substance. They know on some level that they want to come out of a college education having read Homer and Virgil and Dante and Milton and Shakespeare, etc. Not all of them feel this, obviously. It's not for everyone. But a great many of them do, and we feel that that's what college is for. So we're very happy that we have the opportunity to give it.
Well, knowing your background and that you're a St. John's College graduate, I would guess that everything you do is very text-driven. That is, you talk about what the authors actually say, not what students happen to feel about what they say on any given day. Doesn't that fly in the face of current trends, particularly, I think, in English departments?
Oh, yeah, it does. And we expect something from them that I think you can't really count on in English or any department. And that is, if we've assigned a book to them, this is something of gravity and substance, of weight. It's not necessarily something that they will agree with or find agreeable, but it's something that's sufficiently weighty that they have to grant it enough authority to take it seriously and to make the effort of understanding it, really understanding it, before they criticize it, so that the "I don't like that" line just doesn't fly. We do, by the way, bring in, this is unlike St. John's, we do bring in historical and biographical background where appropriate. The three of us alternate lecturing, but we try to make the lectures, as you suggested, very text-oriented and text-driven, so that we don't go into gratuitous biographical accounts of people just because they have interesting lives. We're interested in the biographies insofar as they illuminate the text, so that with someone like Milton, for example, it's very important to know something about his religious background and activities and his own political activities. And it's, I think, extremely important to know something about the conditions under which he produced Paradise Lost, which are just almost incomprehensible, are so awe-inspiring that I think even students who don't particularly like Milton, and one of the three of us teaching the course doesn't like Milton, and he makes it clear that he doesn't like Milton. And students love that. They love seeing us disagreeing. But even someone like that has to grant, knowing the circumstances under which he operated, that the production of this masterpiece is, it's as if Michelangelo had done the Sistine Chapel with all the travail of that, also blindfolded. So we do give background, but you're right. We tend always to go back to the text. The text is what will endure. The criticism, the contextualization, that shifts as scholarly opinion and our knowledge of the past shifts. But the text is what endures, and that's what we want them to come away with.
Now, you've written that W.H. Auden is, quote, a constant presence in the course. How so?
Well, yes, that's a good question. I'm glad you brought that up, because one thing that is not in the syllabus but is in the course, is that we introduce Auden's own poetry and criticism wherever possible, and it turns out to be possible a great deal of the time. One of the things we discovered, and I should have known this, I had a suspicion of it, in fact, before we started teaching the course, but in the process of teaching it, I discovered that almost every reading that was in the original syllabus, and we've added some, and we've also taken a few out, but everything we've added was something that we could determine that Auden either approved of, or in the case of Omeros, we think he would have approved of had he been alive for it. So what we discovered is that the reason that Auden created the course the way he did in 1941 is that these were the books that he wrote about in his own criticism, and then he wrote poems about and drew upon for his poetry, so that it was almost as if the course, the readings for the course, were a kind of commonplace book or a reference source for Auden. They were the library, the sort of furnishings of his mind that were going into the poetry. So it was proved to be much easier than we thought it would be to draw on his poetry to make points about the text in the course that we were reading. And I'll give you an example. When we read Virgil's Aeneid, we've done this both times we've taught it, we accompanied it with a poem by Auden called Secondary Epic. And this has two meanings, at least. One meaning is that the Aeneid is an example of what, you know, literary scholars call a secondary epic. That is, it's drawing on primary epic, on the Homeric poems and other poems that don't have predecessors, at least that we know of, and they're not intertextually related to those texts. Beowulf would be another primary epic. But the Aeneid is clearly drawing on Homer, and does so explicitly, openly. So it's a secondary epic, and there are other things that go with that definition. But so that was one meaning. But the poem is addressed to Virgil and sort of berating Virgil for having stopped the story with the high point of the early Roman Empire, that is Caesar Augustus's reign, the Augustan era. He stopped there. He should have carried the poem, if he was so omniscient and was able to tell the future, with the fall of Rome and the rise of Christianity and of a different kind of Roman rule in the world. So in a way, there's an irony in that title, that secondary epic, that the epic of Rome is secondary to the larger epic of the West, which, you know, in which the classical world and both Athens and Jerusalem, the classical world and the Hebraic world, come together to form the Western tradition in all of its fullness, as expressed in the Christian faith. So Auden was, of course, a believer, a somewhat heterodox one, but he was a believer nonetheless, an Anglican. So that's an example, one of many I could give you, of ways in which we bring him in to the classroom. And often what we'll do is, instead of assigning the poem before class, we'll just pass it out in class and read through it together. And there's a lot of advantages to doing it that way. But one of which is that it's fresh, and they have to kind of think on their feet. They can't have sort of consulted some secondary source or some prepackaged spark notes or something like that to think about what will I say about this poem. So there's a greater degree of spontaneity, and we can also sort of show them how to read a poem. It's a very hard thing. I think most young people today do not really know how to read, not just young people, most of us don't know how to read a poem. So we can show them. And two of the three of us are historians teaching the course. So we're kind of, especially when the English teacher chimes in, that I really hold back and take notice, try to figure out, do I really know how to read a poem? And that brings up something else I just want to point to, is that we're all, to some extent, amateurs in this course. Of course, when we do the late antiquity, Kyle Harper, the provost, is a specialist in that field. He knows Augustine cold. David Anderson knows Shakespeare cold and Milton cold. I'm pretty good on 20th century American literature. That's more or less within my wheelhouse. It's not really my field, but it's in my wheelhouse. So for everything else, we're amateurs. But I'd like to think that we're amateurs in the best sense, that is, lovers of the great things, of these great and noble works that we're privileged to teach to young people.
In an essay entitled The Burden and Beauty of the Humanities, Dr. McClay wrote, "One of the ways that the humanities can help to save us, if they can recover their nerve, is by reminding us that the ancients knew things about humankind that modernity has failed to repeal, even if it has managed to forget them." If you're not a student, one way to remind yourself of what the ancients knew and the moderns cannot repeal is to join us here in Lander, June 9th through 14th, for the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, as we consider No Greater Gift, Friendship, From the Iliad to Facebook. For more information, visit our website, wyomingcatholic.edu. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.